Last week we discussed the question about whether somebody can get himself into a possible situation of danger in order to save others who are in a definite situation of danger. And that's what we spoke about last week. So this week I wanted to take it one step further, and the question was asked to Rav Ashri one step further, can a person save himself at the expense of others, or can you decide who should live and who should die? There were many times in the Holocaust where the decision was, where they needed a certain quota of people, and the question was, can you do whatever you can to save yourself, even though you know that if you save yourself, that means somebody else will be taken in your place? Right. So there were two questions, a two-part question there of Ashri was asked in the Holocaust, in the Kovno ghetto. The Elternrat, which was the elders, the group, I guess, the rabbis, the community leaders, were given 5,000 white cards to give out. And they told them that whoever had a white card would be saved, and his family would be saved and allowed to continue living in the ghetto. And anybody who didn't get a white card would be killed. And they were going to destroy most of the ghetto. There were, I think, 30,000 people in the ghetto at the time, 10,000 workers. So 5,000 of the workers would be saved. And they said to these elders, you can decide who gets the white cards, who lives and who doesn't. And they came to Rav Ashri and they said, you know, can we make this decision? Right? Can we decide who lives and who dies? Can we say, you get a white card, you don't get a white card? Is that up to, do they have the power to make that decision? Is that correct? Halachically, should they make that decision or should they do something else? Somehow just randomly give out the white cards. And then there was the second part to the question that was asked. It seemed more from the side of the people in the ghetto. They said, can we, you know, let's say there's a very strong man, can he do whatever he needs to do in order to get one of those white cards? So let's say he knows that his neighbor has one and he didn't get one. Can he go and steal it from his neighbor? Or can he go and push his way to the front of the line and grab it from these rabbis, from these community leaders, when they were giving out the white cards? Or does he have to just kind of sit back and let whatever happened happen? Right? Is he allowed to do whatever he can, even though it might come at the expense? And he knows that if he grabs somebody else's white card, that means that person will be killed, and this person will live.
Just out of curiosity, I don't know if this was, you know, this question is brought up, but if you have an obligation to, you know, if you put in a predicament where you got, let's say you have your family and you have other people, is there certain people that, you know, obviously, you know, most people are going to go for, you know, you're going to take the family before, you know, before others, but do you have that obligation?
If you can save one,
can you choose
who to save?
Do you have an obligation to save your family over, you know, over somebody else?
Like tzedakah, like family, community.
Right, well, the Gemara talks about a situation where if your Rebbe and your parent is drowning, who do you save first? And the Gemara says you save your Rebbe first, because your parent brought you to Olam Hazeh, and your Rebbe brings you to Olam Haba. Right? So that means you choose who to save. Then there are those, though, I heard the name of Rav Schechter, Rav Herschel Schechter from OIU, that that's true, but if the parent also pays for the child to learn, then in that situation, the parent is saved first because he brought the child to Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, and the Rebbe only does Olam Haba, or it's a choice, he gets to choose, something like that. But it's not a chiv to save the Rebbe before the parent, the parent is paying for the education and sending the boy to yeshiva. So I guess it sounds like there is some, you know, level of where you can choose who gets to, who should be saved.
Is it only currently paying for the education, or is it paid at any
point? It's
paid
at any point. There's some,
at any point.
I guess so. They had a responsibility for bringing you to Olam Haba. The Rebbe is only presently your Rebbe. He wasn't always your Rebbe. Right? I think. So probably. So that's, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how he answers the question. So those are the two questions that were posed to him that I want to talk about tonight. So by way of introduction to the question, I mentioned these two Gemaras last week, but just to remind ourselves of them, because they play a central role in these, just to understand why there is even a question here. We know that there are three averes that the Gemara tells us are Yari Val Yavor, that a person has to violate, that a person has to be killed and not violate. One is Shvichas Damim, meaning to kill a person. A person puts a gun to your head and says, I'm going to kill you unless you kill Plony. So the Gemara says, you should be killed and don't go to kill Plony. The Gemara explains, because my chaz is the dama de dach sumak tfei, right? Who says that your blood is redder than his? Maybe his blood is redder than yours, meaning we don't know who is more important in the eyes of God. So shev al tasa, don't do anything. Don't take the matters into your own hands. Let yourself be killed in that case. Which means you can't kill somebody, right? There's an isser to kill somebody. Not only is there an isser to kill somebody, but there's an isser to kill somebody to save yourself, right? There's an isser to kill somebody to save yourself. So there certainly is a prohibition of killing. At the same time, we find a daf earlier in Sanhedrin on Ein Gimel that the Gemara says Lo Samer Al Dam Re'echa, means that you shouldn't stand by idly while on your friend's blood. Meaning, if a friend is drowning, if a person you see is drowning in the river, go save him. You can't stand by idly because you have an obligation to save that person's life. Lo Samer Al Dam Re'echa. So in these cases that we're discussing, there was a clash between the obligation to save people, right, to save yourself, and at the same time the prohibition to kill somebody, even in place of yourself. So that's how all of these issues seem to depend on these two Gemaras. Now, the most closely related source in the Gemara's times to the questions that are being asked is a Yerushalmi, and it's also mentioned also in a Tosefta, right, which are basically around from the same time. So the Yerushalmi tells a story, or has a machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Tosefta also has the same machlokes, and then the Yerushalmi adds a story. Okay, so we'll read, they're basically the same. There's a small difference, but we're not going to really get into that tonight. The Yerushalmi Tosefta says as follows: Siya shel bnei adam she'amru lahem nachem tulanu echad mikem v'nahar gehu. You have a group of people and another group of enemies surround you, and they tell you that give us one of the people from your group so that we can kill him. Right, the imlav hare anu horgin is kulan. If you don't give us one person from your group, we're going to kill all of you. We'll kill all of you unless you give us one person. They don't say who. They say you pick. Right, you decide which person. The Tosefta and the Yerushalmi say yahargu kulan va'al yimsru lahem nefesh achas meyisrael. Everybody should get killed, and you shouldn't give over one person. You shouldn't give over one person. Let them kill everybody. Aval, im yichduhu lahem, if the enemy said, give us Plony, right? There's a whole group of people, from your group of people, give us Plony, and we want to kill Plony. And then the Tosef says, kigon she yichdu l'sheva ben Bichri, like the story in Shmuel Beis, the story about Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri was, he rebelled against David HaMelech. He started a rebellion against David HaMelech, and David was the king, and he went and ran to a city in running away from the army of David. So the army of David made a siege around the city, and everybody was worried there. They said, you're going to kill us all. And they said, no, we don't want to kill everybody. Just give us Sheva ben Bichri. One person that we're worried about, Sheva ben Bichri, he was Mori ben Malchus. He rebelled against the king. He we want. If you give us him, don't worry, everybody else will be saved. And sure enough, that's what they did. That's what they did. They gave Yoav, the general of the army, Sheva ben Bichri, and everybody in the town was safe. So if that's the case, that they say, give us somebody like the case of Sheva ben Bichri, yithnuhu lahem ve'al yahargu. So in that case, you can give them, if they specify, give us Plony, you can give them Plony and save everybody else. That's the first opinion.
Can you volunteer to go?
In the first case, oh, that's a good question. The answer is yes. right? In the first case, where everybody is in danger and everybody's going to be killed unless they give one person, if one person says, I'm willing to give up my life for everybody else, then yes.
There's a good chance he's going to, they're going to let everyone free, right?
They say, we're going to let everybody free if you give us one person. So he, in essence, he's saving everybody else by sacrificing himself. So yeah, I saw the Chazon Ish writes that a person, if one person sacrifices himself, so then that's allowed and maybe even a mitzvah, because he's saving everybody, he's giving up his own life to save everybody else. So that's the first opinion. Sorry, I'm just trying to find the.
But one on one, that what doesn't work.
Sorry.
One on one, that doesn't work.
One on one.
Well, I'm gonna. If there are only two people
instead. Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Saying, is it only because they're saving a whole group of people? But if there's only two people in the whole city, and they say, we're going to give us one, we're going to kill everybody, can one person give up his life for one other person?
To jump under the boat of somebody else.
Right. It could be. It could be then also. Because you're giving up your life for him. That's you deciding. Here, I can't decide which one of the people in the city should be given to them to die. But if one person decides and says, I'll take the bullet, so then that might be allowed. Right? A person would be able to make his own decision there to save everybody else, maybe even to save one person. But the issur is for the group of people to decide and say, hey, you go, right? To do it in that way. But Reb Shimon Omer, and this is Rish Lakish says, Kach Amru Lahem Kol Hamore V'malchus Bezdavir Chayav Nisa. No, that's not what I was looking for, sorry. Rish Lakish says, Afal Pi, and this is from the Yerushalmi, sorry, the Yerushalmi has a little bit extra. The Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Yochanan says that this case is only that you're Chayav Nisa like Shev Meru, the second case. The second case that we said, that if they say one person, give us Plony, right, and we'll save everybody else, the Mishnah said, the Gemara, Yerushalmi, and Sefer, they say, no problem, give them Plony and save the entire town, right? And the Gemara says, like the case of Shevet ben Bichri in the story in Shmuel. So Rev Yochanan says, and the Gerson most is Rev Yochanan says, that's only if he's Chayev Misa, no, Rish Lakish says, that's only if he's Chayev Misa, like Shevet ben Bichri. Meaning, when do we allow you to give over one person that they explicitly ask for? That's only if that person is Chayev Misa. When that person is Chayev Misa, and then they ask for him, so fine. Right, then you can give him over. But if that person, they say, give us Plony because we don't like him, but he's not Chayev Misa, Reish Lakish's opinion is, you can't give him. Then it's the same as the first case where you can't make that decision and say, you're going to be the one given over. In the case of Sheva ben Bichri, he was Morid b'Malchus. He rebelled against David HaMelech, so there, at least based on the rules of the government, if you rebel against the government, you revolt, you are killed. So there, he was Chayav Misa. So the only case that we have that you're allowed to ask for one person from the city, and they can give you that one person from the city, is only in a case where that one person is Chayav Misa to begin with. Right? Chayav Misa meaning he did something that he should be punished by death. In that case, then when they ask for him, you can give him over. But if he's not obligated to die, he didn't violate an Isser in the Torah that obligates him the punishment of death, then even if they say, give us Plony, you don't have to give them, or you can't. It should be usher.
What's the presumption? Let's say the same are saying, give us Plony now. And
we're going to kill him.
Right, we're going to kill him. But you have no idea what Plony's done in his life. I mean, you're not going to have a trial while we're all standing there. You can ask Plony, what did you do? You can ask them, what do you accuse Plony of? But let's say you don't have time for it. Is there a presumption of innocence or a presumption of guilt?
I guess it depends on the person. And you have to know. Sheva ben Bichri, they knew he was Chayav Misa. They said, well, he's rebelling against the government. We know he's Chayav Misa. So he did something, he's Chayav Misa. If somebody killed somebody else, right, and he's on the run, he's a fugitive on the run, so in that case, you would say, okay, I know he's Chayav Misa, right? We all know he killed somebody, but he's on the run. That's a good question. That's a whole figure. That's a whole separate question.
It's a
good topic, yeah. Harboring criminals. Good question. Right. So, but if you don't know, if you don't know, I would assume if he just seems like a stam guy, another person who seems like a good, he's a good Jew, he comes to shul, and you, I would assume that you would give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, probably give him the benefit of the doubt. So that's Reish Lakish's opinion. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says, no, it doesn't matter. Rabbi Yochanan says it doesn't matter whether he's Chayav Misa or not. If they explicitly ask for one person, you can give them that one person to save the entire town. Because there, I think Rabbi Yochanan's Svara is that you're not making the decision. Right? The problem is when they come to your city, they make a seizure in the city and say, give us this one, give us somebody to kill. So the reason why you can't choose who to give is because you're basically killing that person by deciding you're the one who should go. Right? You're basically killing that person. But when they say, give us Sheva ben Bichri, so even if Sheva ben Bichri was a fine person and he wasn't Chayav Misa, but then you're not making the decision. Right? You wouldn't be causing the death by giving him over. He was already called out. Right? It could be that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. It doesn't matter whether he's Chayav Misa or not. That's not what this is about. Right? And Rabbi Yochanan, I would imagine, would ask the following question on Reish Lakish. Let's say they didn't ask for anybody specific. Right? They don't ask for anybody. But you know there's one person in there who's Chayav Misa. So can you give him? Can you give them that person?
No way. No
way. What? So according to Reish Lakish, why not? Right, Reish Lakish said that if the only time you can give them somebody is if they signal somebody out and he's Chayav Misa. Why? Probably because by giving him over to them, you're not really causing him to die. He deserves to die anyway. Right? Well, that's one way to look at it at least. Right? But Rabbi Yochanan would say, no, you can't give him. You can't give him in. Even though he's Chayav Misa, you'd be causing him to die. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, if they ask for somebody, so they're causing that person to die. They're choosing him. But if they don't ask for somebody, so then who are you to decide who should die? I would imagine Reish Lakish could answer that question, right?
So if we're in the time of the Beit HaMikdash and we have a Sanhedrin, and if something like this happens, then they could give him over because the Sanhedrin would have the power to kill him.
Right, so Chayav Misa, you know, it doesn't sound like he actually has to be Chayav Misa in the Sanhedrin, meaning that they had to have gone through the court's process and found him guilty in Sanhedrin that they were actually going to kill him. It sounds like if you know that he violated a prohibition, that should be punishable by death, even if he didn't go through the whole process in the Sanhedrin. So that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Then the Yerushalmi tells a story about Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which basically says that a person was running away from the government, and he did something, I don't remember what, he did some terrible crime, and he was running away from the government, and he came and hid by the town of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And the government came and made a seizure on the city, and they said, we're going to kill everybody unless you give us that person. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi goes to that person, he finds that person, he says, and he convinces him to go out and give himself in, because he says, if you don't give yourself in, then the entire town will be killed. So the least you could do after you did that crime to begin with, the least you could do now is to give yourself in and save everybody else in the town. And sure enough, he did that, right? And that's the end of that part of the story. Then the Yerushalmi continues and says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi used to learn with Eliyahu HaNavi all the time. Right? Eliyahu HaNavi used to come visit Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. But after this story happened, for a number of days, he didn't come. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi started fasting and doing tshuva, and he didn't understand what he did wrong because he thought he was doing the correct thing. Right? They asked for him, and it seems like he was Chayav Misa. Right? So even if you want to be machmir like Reish Lakish, that's only if they ask for somebody and he's Chayav Misa.
And he only convinced him to go.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he may have then brought him out there. But yeah, he convinced him, but he, you know, brought him out also. So he didn't understand what he did wrong. So finally Eliyahu comes back, and Rabbi Shimon Levi says to him, what did I do wrong? Right? I followed all the rules. I did everything right. What was the problem? So Eliyahu Hanavi's answer was, Amar Le Vizu Mishnas Chasidim. Is this a Mishnah for Chasidim? Right? So it's not clear exactly what that means. Vizu Mishnas Chasidim. And that's the end of the story. That's it. That's the story. Meaning it sounds like, and we'll see, the Rambam paskins and we'll understand what that means now. The Rambam writes, like Reish Lakish, that if you have a group of people and they say, give us anybody, you can't decide who should go, you have to, and let them kill everybody. If they say, give us Ploni, and Ploni is Chayav Misa, so the Rambam writes, you can give them Ploni, but he adds in, Ve'ein morim lahem kein l'chatchila. But we don't tell people this, to do this l'chatchila. And if he's not chayev misa, the Rambam ends with, if this person that they asked for is not chayev misa, so then certainly everybody should get killed. Not let themselves be killed instead of giving over that person who's not chayev misa. But what does it mean, ein morim kein l'chatchila? Right, what does that mean? If that's the halacha, if the halacha is that when there's a group of people who they're telling you they were going to kill all of you unless you give us Ploni, and Ploni is Chayav Nisa, the Rambam says, the halacha is you can give them Ploni. But Ein Morin Kein L'Chatzchila. Right? So what does that mean, Ein Morin Kein L'Chatzchila? So there are those who explain what that means. The Ketzav Mishnah writes, I think it's Ketzav Mishnah, so they write, that comes from the story of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. That when Eliyahu HaNavi said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Zu Mishnas Chassidim, meaning it's not really for you to do, right? You're a chassid. It's not for you to be involved in. If you want to allow the people in the city to take it into their own hands and decide to give the person that they asked for, this fugitive, and to hand him over and let him be killed by the government, that's fine, right? That you're allowed to do, because the halacha is really you're allowed to if he's chayav misa. But for you to go and make sure that he gets given, that he's given over to make sure that he's killed, he says that is already, that's the Zumish is Hasidim, that's something for you to be involved with, that's something that you should have on your hands. And therefore the Rambam, I think in light of that, the Rambam writes, Ein Morin Kein L'Chatzchila. Even though the halacha is that you can choose that, give them that one person that they ask for when that person is Chayav Misa, nevertheless, better to not get involved. Better to kind of leave it alone. It's better to be passive in that situation, because suffik pikuach nefesh, we should be machmir. We should be machmir when it comes to a situation of potential danger. Suffik pikuach nefesh. Fine. So that's the Rambam, and that's what he writes. So how do we paskin? Right, the Rambam paskins like Reish Lakish. It's only if they specifically say, give us Ploni, and Ploni is Chayav Misa. The Rama quotes two different opinions. His first opinion is like Rabbi Yochanan, that if they don't ask for anybody, you can't give them anybody, everybody has to die. If they ask for somebody, you can give them that person. And then he says, and some say, Yesh Omrim, that only if the person they ask for is Chayav Misa. Only if the person they ask for is chayev to die, only then can you give him over. And usually the rule is, when the Rama quotes two opinions, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions, there's stam v'yesh omrim halacha k'stam. Usually we follow the first opinion, the regular opinion. The yesh omrim is a minority, some say. So it would sound like we're like with Yochanan, that if they ask for one person, regardless of whether that person's chayev misa or not, you can give that person over to save everybody else. But not everybody agrees with that. The Taz disagrees, and he says like that we pass him like the Rambam, who said that we pass him like Reish Lakish, that it's only when they explicitly ask for one person, and that one person is Chayav Misa, that one person is Chayav to die. The Be'er Hetev adds in, others also, that in a situation where you wouldn't be able to give over a person to be killed, right? Let's say it doesn't meet this criteria, where they ask for somebody, they don't ask for anybody, right? There's a group of people that say, give us somebody from your group, otherwise we're going to kill you all. So you give us somebody, or we're going to torture everybody. But if you give us one person, we're not going to kill him, we'll just torture him. Does the same rule apply? Or is it only by them killing people? Right? Is it by any punishment? When they say, we're going to punish you in some way, or we're going to take all of your money, give us one person's money, does it apply in that case? So the Be'er Hetev says yes. And in all the situations, it's not specific to kill, if they threaten to kill everybody or one person, even if they threaten to do whatever they threaten to do, if it doesn't fit the criteria of that the person that they ask for one person, and that person is chayav misa or chayav whatever punishment they want to give, so then you cannot give over that person in that situation.
What threat is they? Give us this person, we're going to take him, and it's not your business, we're going to do with him. Or,
yeah,
horrible evil is going to fall upon this entire community, and we're going to do horrible things to you. It's vague, you don't know which one is worse, which one is better. Do they address that issue well?
Not really, except for that they do say that, you know, that we don't give people over to enemies, because we know that once people are in enemy hands, even if they claim that they won't do anything too bad, usually it gets worse than expected. So we try not to give people over to enemies. So it could be that would apply in those cases, but they don't explicitly state what they will do. So applying all of that to our question, or Rav Ashri's question, so Rav Ashri writes, it would seem that in this case, when they had these 5,000 white tickets, whoever had the white ticket would be saved, everybody else would die. So he said, how can we decide who should get the white tickets and who shouldn't? Because that's basically picking everybody else to die. Right? You're basically saying, if I decide which 5,000 people get these white tickets, I'm basically picking everybody else to die. And the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, didn't say, give us this person and this person and this person. If they said, give us all these people and give the white tickets to everybody else, that's one thing. But that's not what they said. They didn't ask for specific people, right? And even if they did ask for specific people, you have to know, are these specific people Chayav Misa or not? Right, but if it's in a situation where they don't ask for specific people, it would seem that you would not be able to, this group of community leaders would not be able to give out to specific people those white cards. However, Rav Ashri says, then he found in a shach a Mahari Baal. The Mahari Baal is the Mahari Ben Lev, who lived in Turkey in the early 16th century, and then served as a rabbi and died in Salonika, and he passed away in 1580. So he was a big posek in his time, in the 16th century. So he has a question there. They asked him, if the king says, give us two people who we will take, two rich people, I think the case was they don't care who, but just give us two people, and they're going to take those two rich people. So if there was somebody who had some connection with the king, he was asked, would he be allowed to kind of get these two people out of it, and make sure that two rich people aren't included, but you know that if these two people aren't included, others will be included. So can you? It's the same type of question. They didn't explicitly say, give us these two people, but rather all they said was, give us two wealthy people. And I want to make sure that Plony and Plony are not those two people. Am I allowed to do that? Because if I make sure that they're not picked, then I'm basically ensuring that somebody else will be picked in their place. So Mahari Ben Lev says that yes. If he did not specify two people, if you did not say two specific people, then you would be allowed to save them, even though that means that others would be put in their place. But if you did ask for two specific people, then you can't save them to put others in their place. So let's say Plony and Almoni were two rich people in this king's town, and the king said, I want Plony and Almoni. So then, even if you had connections with the king, you can't save Plony and Almoni in order to have two other people put in their place. But if they didn't say who, he just said, I want two rich people, I'm going to take all their money, I'm going to kill them, but he doesn't say, give me Plony and Almoni, he doesn't say anybody, then I would be allowed to make sure that Plony and Almoni are not included in those two. And he brings a proof from the Gemara. The Gemara says that there's another story in Shmuel Beis that the Givonim were very upset with Shaul because what did Shaul do? I think Shaul attacked them. They made a deal with Yoshua when the Israel came into the land that they'd be allowed to live in the land peacefully. And Shaul decided to attack them when he was the king, and they were very upset at Shaul because he violated this promise that they made with Yoshua, and that Yoshua made to them, that they'd be allowed to live peacefully in the land. So Shaul killed seven of these Givonim, And when David HaMelech took over, so he went to them, when David HaMelech took over, after some time, there was some time of famine, and there was no rain. And he figured out that the reason why there's no rain was because the Givonim were upset at the Jewish people and davening against the Jewish people that they should be punished, because they were upset that Shaul killed these seven people and violated that promise of Yehoshua. So David HaMelech came to this group of people and said to them, "What can I do? What can I do that you would forgive us?" He says, "Can I give you money? What can I do for you?" So they told David, they said, "Listen, Shaul didn't take any money from us. So you can't really, money wouldn't help us. But he did take his seven of our lives. So what we would like is seven of Shaul's relatives, and we'll kill them in place of the seven people who he killed." So David HaMelech said, "Okay." Right, which I was surprised by. So David HaMelech said, "Okay." And he had Shaul's relatives walk in front of the Urim V'Tumim, the Aron. And the Aron decided, somehow he was told, which ones should be the ones given over to be killed. And David HaMelech, the Pasuk says, saved Mephibosheth, who was the son of Yehonasan, or Yehonasan, the son of Shaul, who was very close with David HaMelech. And they made a promise to each other to always look after each other's, to always be close. So David and Yehonasan were very close. So Mephibosheth was Yehonasan's son. So David saved Mephibosheth from being one of the seven who should be killed, given over to be killed. So the Mahari ben Lev brings a proof from there. He says, look, it didn't say which seven of Shaul's relatives should be taken. And David HaMelech chose that one of them should not be included, or he davened that one of them should not be included. So you see that if there's not a specific number given, right, seven, it said seven, but it didn't say who, it said a specific number, sorry, but it didn't say who should be those, who should make up that specific number of seven people who need to be given over, then you're allowed to save whoever you can, and even though that means somebody else will be in there instead of him. And he brings a proof from the story of David HaMelech. So that's what the Ma'ari ben Lev says. Rav Ashri thought that that was exactly like our case. He said, because the case that he was asked was where they basically said, give us here 5,000 tickets to save 5,000 people, right? And everybody else will be killed. It didn't say which people will be killed and which people will be saved. Right? It just said everybody will be saved except for 5,000 people. So the elders of the town would be allowed, just like David HaMelech was allowed to say, don't make this person one of the seven. Mephibosheth shouldn't be one of the seven who's given over to be killed. So too the elders would be able to say, you know, these 5,000 that we decide that we think would be the most important to remain here, they would be allowed to decide which ones should take those white cards and be saved, because there was no they didn't specify who should be included in the decree and not. So the Rav Ashri thought that case that he was asked about was most closely patterned after the story of the question of the Mahari ben Lev, and therefore he told the Chachamim that they can decide. He then said that there was a similar story of Avraham Shapira, who was the Dvar Avram, who was also one of the great rabbis in Kovna at the time. So he was asked a similar question, where they were told that everybody was going to be killed, tell everybody to come to the square, everybody, if anybody's left in their house, they'll be killed if they come to the square, so only most people will be killed. And they basically asked him, should they tell people or not? Because they don't really want to tell people to come to the square, because by telling people to come to the square, you're basically killing a lot of them. But if you leave them in their homes, they'll also die. So what should they do? Should they tell everybody or not? So Rav Shapira, they had to wake him up for this, and he couldn't go back to sleep at night. He's a very old man. And he basically told them that when an entire Jewish community is under such a threat, then you need to do whatever you can to save as many people as you can. Right? And all bets are off. So he said, he told them, so tell everybody they have to go to the town square, because at least then you'll save some of them. So even though you'll be causing the death of others, but you'll be saving some of them. In a situation where the entire community is under such a threat and in such a dangerous situation, then the chiyuv hatzalah, the obligation to save as many as you can, takes precedence. So Rav Ashri says, so the same would be true here. it would be the responsibility of the elders of the town, the chachamim, the rabbis, the community leaders, who are holding those 5,000 white tickets. They would have to decide who would survive, because they have to do whatever they can to save as many people as they can. And that's what he told them. That's what he paskened about that. There is a question, I think somebody asked last week, about drawing straws, right? Because we know about the story of Yonah. Right, when Yonah was on the boat, and the boat was hit some storms and waters, then they said, let's draw straws, and whoever's straw is drawn will be the one, hits his god, and you'll be the one who will have to throw off the boat, basically. So the question is, why don't we do that? Does that work? Right, let's say the siege comes to the town, and everybody says, you know what, let's draw straws. So can that be a way to decide? If they say, we're going to kill everybody unless you give us somebody. And we said that if they say, give us somebody, but they don't tell you who, then you can't give anybody, right? But let's say everybody decides to draw straws, and that's a way to figure out who, pick one person, right? Whoever draws the short straw, he's the one who has to go out there and give up his life. So does that work or not? So I found that is a machlokas, whether that is, whether that's appropriate or whether you can do that. The Chazon Ish says you cannot. That's not an appropriate way to decide, and rather everybody should die. The reason why he says that that's not an appropriate thing to do, he says, because otherwise the Tosefta or the Yerushalmi would have come up with that. Right? If there is a way, when the siege comes and they say, we're going to kill everybody in the town unless you give us one person, but you decide who to give, if there was a way for them to get out of it, so then certainly the Yerushalmi or the Tosefta would have mentioned it. They would have said, everybody should decide who should go. Right? Everybody should have a lottery. Who should go? But the fact that nobody mentioned this lottery and just says that everybody should be killed, he says, you see that the lottery does not work.
It doesn't mention that somebody can volunteer either.
It doesn't mention that somebody can volunteer either, but somebody volunteering would be his own prerogative. Right? I mean, again, the problem here would be that you, as a group, you're deciding who should be sent.
The group is deciding that they're all making that their own prerogative.
So the Chazon Ish says, but if everybody agrees to draw straws, then you would be allowed to. Right. If everybody agrees, let's draw straws, then you would be allowed to. But if somebody says, let's draw straws, and not everybody's so sure about it, then that's not going on your own prerogative. Right. Meaning a person would be able to give up his life to save everybody else. But I can't decide which one of us should give up our life to save everybody else, right? Because then you're causing that person to die. So that you can't do. But if that person decides on his own, so that you are allowed to do. Right? And so if everybody says, yeah, let's draw straws, that's a good way of doing it, and then that person who draws a short straw gets up and says, okay, you know, I'm going, so fine. So that's everybody agreeing to do that, and him also agreeing to go on his own.
I would imagine that it would apply not just for drawing straws, but for anything.
Yeah, any type of random lottery.
As long as we do this, like, we're always getting 1 foot. Whoever stands 1 foot the longest is the one who goes, or the one who comes down first.
I don't know. Maybe. I guess. I mean, the reason why a lottery, any type of random lottery, might be more significant is because there is room to say, there are some who we have times in Tanakh where they do a lottery to choose somebody, and the assumption is that Hashem is involved in the lottery, right? So if you're doing something completely random, so then I can understand that God is involved, so it must be this is meant to be, right? But if it just happens to be I have bad balance, right, so then that's not really
Hashem's involved in that too.
Yeah, but you know, you're setting yourself up for failure in that case. God is involved in you having bad balance.
I mean,
you're
going to be involved in the lottery.
No, the lottery, you know, it's a random act. Here it's based on skill.
But you didn't address the question whether the people could steal these white tickets or whether they could.
No, I didn't get to that yet. Right. Yeah, no, this is the first part of the question. I'm not sure. But at the same time, why would it be any different? Isn't that everybody giving their agreement and saying, I agree to do this, I'm basically giving my... I know I have bad balance, chances are it'll be me, but I'm okay with that, I'm saving everybody else. Right? It should be no worse than that.
Right.
Yeah. And then there are others who say that just one more point about the lottery. They say that if it's something very out of the ordinary, for example, you're at sea on a boat, and you see a whole bunch of boats around you, and all those boats are sailing through nice weather with nice calm waters, and so for some reason on top of your boat there's this great rain cloud and there's a terrible storm and there's vicious waves, and it's clear that that's an abnormal thing because you're in the middle of all these boats who are not being affected in the same way as you, then you know there's something wrong here. And in that situation, also you'd be able to use a lottery, but I saw somewhere you should do it three times. And if it's three times coming out of the same person, then you know that the lottery was from Hashem. Right, that random lottery was from Hashem, the hand of Hashem, and you should follow it because it's such an extraordinary situation and different than everybody else around you, and it happened three times in a row, so then you can assume that lottery is from Hashem. So the second part of the question, so that was the first part. So he told the group of the rabbis that they can decide who to give it to because, A, like the Mahari Ben Lev's case, that it didn't say who should be taken, therefore they can choose who is not taken. And because of Rav Shapira's case, that it doesn't, that in a situation where the entire community is in danger, then you can do whatever you can to save as many people as you can. The second part of the question, he quotes a Rama who says that if you see that something is going to damage you, you see a damage about to hit you, you're allowed to move out of the way even though it's going to damage somebody else. Right? So if you see a bullet coming towards you, you're allowed to dodge the bullet even though you know somebody's standing behind you. Right? Right? Because you're allowed to move out of the way of danger even though that danger will then hit somebody else. But there are those who then comment on that comment of the Rama and say that's only if the danger has not yet begun. But once the danger situation has already begun, then you can't dodge it. If you're already in the danger, then, and the danger is already present, then you can't get yourself out of it if that's going to endanger the other person. And so Rav Ashri's first thought is, then what about our situation, right? Where here, the cards are given out. So, or even if the cards are not given out, and they're about to be given out, so can the strongest people push their way to the front of the line to try to get the cards? So Rav Ashri thought that in that situation, everybody is already in danger. That the danger is already present. The danger has begun. Because they already told everybody, we're going to kill most of the people in the ghetto. In which case, the danger has already started. If the danger started already, you're not allowed to dodge the danger in order to save yourself if that's going to endanger somebody else, or it's going to damage somebody else. And therefore, Ashri thought that you should not be allowed to move out of the way. You should not be allowed to steal somebody's ticket because if your life is already in danger because you don't have a white ticket, so you shouldn't be able to steal his white ticket because that would be dodging the damaging situation for yourself, but then you'd be damaging the other person. And therefore he thinks that you shouldn't be able to. But in the end, he's not as convinced. And then he also says, is this similar to the Mahari Ben Lev's case, where they don't specifically say who should be killed, so is it similar to that? So again, he says no, because in the situation of the Mahari Ben Lev, it's before the danger is already present. They haven't already picked people, right? If they don't pick people, you can make sure certain people are not chosen. But if they already chose people, meaning they already gave out the white cards, and if you didn't get a white card, you were basically being chosen to be killed, so then you already chosen to be killed, then you can't do whatever you can to save yourself. According in the Mahari Ben Lev's case, that's not the same case. But Rav Ashri then says, even though it seems like it should be usher based on all the sources, he says, but what can I say? As we know from Rav Shapira's case, that when an entire community is in danger or is under the threat of danger and they're told they're going to be destroyed, then they have a heter, basically, to do whatever they can to save themselves and to do whatever they can to save as many people as they can. And therefore he writes that even though it seems like it should be, you should just sit back and accept your fate, and if you didn't get a white card, you don't get a white card, He said, but like Rav Shapiro, who was, you know, the Gadol Hador in that time, in that area, he was considered the posek there. So he said, how could I, you know, based on what he said, how could I tell them that they can't do whatever they can to save themselves? And just like it would be, the rabbis would be allowed to decide who gets the white cards, because they have an obligation to make sure that they save as many people as they can, so too each person would have that same ability and obligation to make sure that they're saved as much as they can. So they would be allowed to do whatever they can to get those white cards. And he says, this is what I told them. This is how I paskin for them. I paskin for them that, yeah, they would be allowed to do whatever they can to get those white cards to save themselves, because since the entire community was in danger, so then, you know, everybody can try to make sure they can save as many people as they can, or they can save themselves as much as they can. So if that meant pushing your way to the front of the line and taking somebody else's card, he says, I couldn't tell them not to. So in the end, he paskins that, yes, the rabbis, the community leaders, can choose who gets the 5,000 cards. It doesn't have to be random. And yes, the people who, if they want to do whatever, they are allowed to do whatever they can to get those cards. The people, the community, is allowed to do whatever they can to get those cards.
And stealing? They're allowed to steal the cards?
So he doesn't explicitly say that. He doesn't get into that. He doesn't mention that detail. But... It could, yeah. I don't know what happened.
Especially if you pop them up, it better not. I'm just happy I'm not the rabbi.
Yeah, lachtof. I feel a bizarro la'atmo.
So you had to kill him to get his white card?
So unless he's saying that you're allowed to grab it, that means before they give it out. I don't think so. Yeah, it's a good question, whether they're allowed to actually violate another iser to do that. They are kind of causing the other person to die by taking their white cards in their place. The question is, does that apply even once the white card was given to somebody, can you then go and take it from him? So that he isn't, it's not so clear in his tshuva that that's the case. Sounds like it's grabbing. The word is grabbing. Can you grab one of the white cards? So maybe that means once they're given out, they're given out. But when they're being given out, you can get to the front of the line and grab one. But just go and take one from somebody else, maybe not. Again, he doesn't really explicitly say that in the tshuva, but...
Is there a method given for high schools to give out the cards, or is it the rabbis?
Said they chose whoever they thought... They were whoever they thought life was more significant. How? I don't know. Right? To quote the words in the English translation of what Rav Shapira said, he said, if a decree is issued that a Jewish community will be destroyed and the possibility exists that some part of the community will be allowed to be saved, the leaders of the community are obligated to gird themselves with the courage necessary to act with the fullest sense of the responsibility that lies upon them. Every possible measure would have to be taken to save as many people as could be saved.
I don't believe that wrong.
Hmm?
I don't believe that wrong.
No. No. And,
they can duplicate these white cards.
Not then. Not in the ghetto.
Isn't, like, also this question, isn't everyone in the ghetto going to eventually go to cash fishing and sort of die?
They didn't know. I didn't know. He survived.
Rav
Ashri.
He was in the ghetto?
He was in the Kovna ghetto.
So he got a card then?
It could be. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Historically, I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway, but yeah, that is what he passed him. He passed him that they could decide, even though they are deciding and basically...
And he didn't give his card to somebody else.
It doesn't sound like he was... he didn't make the decision. Somehow he was asked about this, but he did not make the decision. But yeah, somehow he survived. He survived. That he told them that even though by choosing to give one person the card and not somebody else, they're basically sending that other person to death. Nevertheless, he said, in this situation, you'd be allowed to, because of A, to prevent somebody from being included in that list is allowed before he's specified, and also because when a community is in danger, you can do whatever you can to save as many people as you can. So I figured that we would, anyway, just my thoughts for why we learned some of these tshuvas in this time of year. I figured, there's no better time of year to think about the tremendous mesiras nefesh that the people had, to hear the questions that were asked in the midst of the horrors of the Holocaust, and to hear their desires to still in the shadow of death, to still ask the questions, to try to do the right things. So I thought during the 3 weeks it would be an appropriate time to commemorate and to remember their great mesiras nefesh, and to give them honor through their questions, what they asked through in such hard situations.
Thank you very much.